AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. The U.S. Supreme Court says women can continue using mifepristone for abortion while the courts decide if the drug is legal. CBS's Steve Futterman.
The High Court's decision is not a final ruling on mifepristone. It only deals with whether the drug can be used while the ongoing legal battle takes place. Law Professor Lori Levinson.
The Supreme Court order is the best that those who support access to abortion medication could hope for.
A Texas judge earlier this month ruled that mifepristone was improperly approved by the FDA 23 years ago and banned its use during the appeal process. That ban has now been struck down. Most legal experts expect the Supreme Court to eventually rule on the entire case. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
Students across Florida protest Republican Governor Ron DeSantis's education policies they say target minority programs. CBS's Christian Benavides.
Republican Governor Ron DeSantis's proposal includes eliminating diversity programs, banning gender studies majors, and weakening tenure protection for professors.
They're not going to be able to learn history. Being able to learn history is so important so that we don't repeat it.
But DeSantis isn't backing down. He says diversity, equity, and inclusion is really about imposing an ideological agenda on students.
An involuntary manslaughter charge against Alec Baldwin has officially been dropped in connection with the shooting death of a cinematographer on the Rust movie set. CBS's Jonathan Bigliotti.
Prosecutors say the decision does not absolve Baldwin of criminal culpability and charges may be refiled. Charges have not been dropped against Hannah Gutierrez-Reed, the armorer in charge of the weapons on set. Her lawyers say they expect her to be exonerated.
No let-up in the violence between warring factions in Sudan's capital, according to a State Department official. Planning is actively underway for the evacuation of U.S. personnel from Sudan, and decisions are being made now, but no order has been given to pull out of the dozens of U.S. staff in Sudan. The second person to walk on the moon is getting a new title, CBS's Peter King reports.
Buzz Aldrin set foot on the moon in 1969. He was an Air Force colonel. Since then, the retired fighter pilot and lunar module pilot has received just about every honor imaginable for aviation and spaceflight, and he has two craters named for him on the moon. Next month, the U.S. Space Force says Colonel Aldrin will become Brigadier General Buzz Aldrin, the title honorary since he's officially retired. At age 93, the Space Force says it salutes Buzz Aldrin as a tireless advocate for space exploration.
This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Thousands of daycare centers are in jeopardy in Wisconsin, and families may soon see their child care costs go up. The Wisconsin Department of Children and Families says funding for the Child Care Count Stabilization Payment Program is expected to be cut in half soon. Officials say there's much less federal pandemic relief money to work with. The program keeps 3,000 daycare centers in Wisconsin in business. People in southeast Wisconsin are busy cleaning up after thunderstorms rolled through late yesterday. There was flooding and downed trees and power lines. We Energy says about 1,700 homes and businesses lost power at some point. Bayview may have gotten the worst of it, with hail, flooding, and a tree came down on someone's car. In sports, the Brewers host Boston tonight. Freddie Peralta starts for Milwaukee. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
Milwaukee. You have to check out Mob Craft Beer, the world's first crowdsourced brewery where they turn your ideas into beer. Stop in their downtown tap room to try flagships, seasonals, limited release crowdsourced brews that you won't find anywhere else, and more. Mob Craft also has a pizza kitchen making craft pies with the freshest ingredients. And enjoy their amazing tap room featuring over 20 constantly rotating draft lines, indoor and outdoor seating on their dog-friendly patio, and a killer view of the Milwaukee skyline. Mob Craft Beer, located in the heart of Walker's Point in Milwaukee. For more info, head to mobcraftbeer.com.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com. WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUK.
Download the podcast and never miss a minute.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, interestingly enough, President Biden is, going to sign an executive order in the coming weeks that would limit the investment from U.S. companies into parts of China. This seems, I don't know, to steal a Bidenism, this seems like a pretty big freaking deal. And here to share some thoughts on just how big of a deal this could be, and maybe we should get behind it. Just a thought. I've asked our good friend Emily Delabriere to come talk with us. She's a co-founder of Horizon Advisory. HorizonAdvisory.org is their website. Emily, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you for having me.
So how big of a deal is this? I mean, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm going, you know, wow, this seems like a pretty big freaking deal.
Short answer, yes, big deal and big message, I think, in particular to the private sector, to investors, that they're not off the hook and that U.S. crackdown on co-option by China, supporting China's international offensive, that's just not going to go away. The U.S. is going to keep putting pressure on this. There are a lot of challenges to this effort. Challenges in terms of existing pushback that's already been evident over the past few months, even years, as this, in parallel, the executive order being developed by the administration and efforts to hit the same objective in Congress as those have moved along. There's been a ton of pushback, which really underscores the degree of co-option of relevant players by China. That's one of the key obstacles. There's going to be a huge oversight, monitoring, et cetera, obstacle. There's the difficulty of the scope that's currently assigned to this executive order and making it bigger. But then the big underlying thing too is that the U.S. also has to solve the problem of China investing in America. And we haven't quite done that yet. So those are all like the problems, but the short answer is yes, this is a huge deal. And it's a really, really powerful message to the private sector to stop sneaking around corners and to actually not get punished.
Yeah, when I read this initially, my mind before I read the whole article was, finally we're going to stop allowing the Chinese to come and buy up our farmland and our companies and buy us up from within. It's not what that is. This is, outward money going to China from U.S. companies, which again, there's part of me that goes, this is what we should be. We should have been, as consumers, as the public, holding these companies accountable and boycotting, protesting, whatever. I mean, we're a country where you put a transgender woman's face on a beer can and people lose their minds, but yet move the factory, move industries, just free market.
And we should still be, right? Because actions by the government to this end are only going to go so far and are only going to be so effective. And ultimately, in America, what's going to make this decision and what's going to force companies to actually act in the national interest and the people's interest, that's the people stepping up and saying this isn't cool.
Yeah.
So we absolutely have to make that the narrative and start, you know, calling out, boycotting, protesting the companies that are busy selling the country to China.
I had a conservative friend tell me that this was an act of war, that we're sending a signal to China that they are now the enemy. Do you see it the same way?
That's a tough question because there are a bunch of different angles there. Is China the enemy? And are we? Yes. Are we sending powerful enough a signal that they are? I'm not sure. And I guess the element I would add here is that, as we were chit-chatting a little bit before just now, and you mentioned Yellen, and Yellen kind of backpedaling or arguing against or warning against efforts to really decouple the US and Chinese economies. If we have important parts of government doing that and watering down our position on China, then are we actually signaling an act of war? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, there's this weird thing, because I was going to bring up the Yellen piece that's saying, you know, warning against us decoupling, because it might send that message. But look, I think we've been at war with China for a very long time. It's just been an economic war, and we've been losing because I don't think we've been prepared for what was coming and what was happening. And I don't think people paid attention. They were just happy to get a basket full of cheap stuff at Walmart. And never mind all the job losses. Never mind the broken communities. Never mind all the horrible negative stuff that was happening. The majority of us were getting cheap junk, Emily. So we were happy. And you know what? It ain't cheap no more.
Yes. And also, just to your initial point, we've been at war with China. China's been at war with us. And China's been so clear about that and is so clear about that. Basically everything, whether it's industrial policy or foreign policy, that's framed out in the Chinese system is framed out in an effort to compete with us and to beat us. And they're just that focused in their approach. And we're busy scattered all over the place, plus dealing with all the obstacles that they've already thrown our way, because whether we realize it or not, thanks to everything you've said, thanks to the hollowing out of the American industrial base, thanks to the job loss, thanks to the inequality that's resulted in the polarization, we're actually like off balance as we try to grapple with China's threat.
Because this is one of those things where, you know, both the right and the left, Democrats, Republicans, red hat, blue hats, this is, I think, an issue that we should be uniting around. This seems to me to be that call, that national call to action, to save the future of our economy, to save our industrial base, to leave something for our children, and not end up being hollowed out from within. This seems to me to be something that we could rally around, no?
Absolutely. I mean, it's mind-blowing. First of all, China at this point is a bipartisan issue. Everything that actually competing with China means doing and means responding to and means recognizing with a problem, yeah, that those are bipartisan issues. That's jobs. That's the health of the economy.
But why is this an executive order? This is my problem. The president can only get something done from now to the end of his term via executive order. There's not going to be nothing positive passed. This could have been, you know, everyone coming together and going, we're all going to do this, so that it isn't just Biden doing it through an executive order. Or am I misreading this?
So you're not misreading in terms of this should be legislation. I will say, though, if this isn't even a question of polarization. This isn't a two sides of the aisle issue. What this is in both camps, the parties that are co-opted by, either directly co-opted by China or co-opted by the finance entities that are themselves co-opted with China. This is them.
So it's the money again. It's not right left, as we say. It's exactly. It's top down.
Precisely. Yes. And that's like the real threat here. We have a common adversary. We should be able to unite and take action against it as a country. The issue is that common adversary has also co-opted some really, really important power bases in our country.
That's frightening. And look, I give the president credit for taking this on. This could have been something you just let the Congress do, but the fact that there's going to be an executive order tells me at least he understands that there's a problem.
Yes. And even if it's been watered down, you know, is actually trying to make this a priority.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're here with Emily De La Bruyere. She's a co-founder of Horizon Advisory, horizonadvisory.org, the website. Make sure you check out the work she does there. The war frame came to light last week. evidently in New York, there's something they call police stations for the Chinese. The FBI arrested, I guess it was the FBI arrested some people, you know, two guys, charges of conspiring to act as agents for China and obstruction of justice. The police departments, Chinese police departments in New York and in major cities, is that really happening?
It's really happening. China has overseas police stations all over the world, including in the U.S., that are what they literally do is enforce the rule, the oversight, the control of the Chinese Communist Party within American borders all across the globe.
Why isn't this a bigger story? I mean, you know, I haven't seen anything on the F channel. I haven't seen anything on the CNN or any of them. Somebody emailed me and said, hey, there's a press conference. That's how I found out about it. A listener emailed it to me. Why isn't this the issue?
I don't know, especially considering that it's the narrative here is pretty amazing. You get to hear about people, you get to hear about an FBI raid. But it's pretty shocking, especially because this isn't a new phenomenon. So Canada, for example, discovered overseas police stations there months ago. And actually there was an uproar over that. Same thing in Europe. But still, if you stop somebody in the street and you said, hey, did you hear about those Chinese overseas police stations? I don't think there would be a whole lot of recognition. So I don't know why it's not a huge story. It should be.
So are they snatching people up? Are they issuing citations? What's the mission of these? Just to scare the you know what out of people? I mean, I'm curious. The point.
Yeah. The biggest line of effort that they conduct is coercing Chinese nationals or people with ties to China in the United States or wherever they're based. So in this case, the New York City case, what's come out thus far is that what they were doing was cracking down on dissidents in the United States, including pro-democracy activists. And a lot of the stories that have come out, what you hear about is the overseas police officers, we'll call them. I don't even want to give them that respect.
Agents, thank you.
Bring people in, threatening their families that are still in China, making lists of dissidents and otherwise coercing them. So it's primarily oversight again on Chinese-tied individuals.
Yeah, so this sounds an awful lot like, you know, I'm a little bit older. I remember the Soviet era. This sounds like a lot of the stories we heard of the Soviet era and the KGB and things that we heard may have been happening here. This we actually know is happening.
Yes. And I also think that we need to recognize as we look at this story right now that that's where these Chinese overseas police stations are starting. There's the next question of where are they going to end? Beijing wants international control, and it wants international control not only of Chinese nationals, people with families in China, but of everybody. This is what they do now because that's a priority and it's what they're able to do. But what we should be seeing when we see the police stations is a Chinese effort to apply its control, its authority all over the world.
Here's my problem with all of this. You're seeing these stories coming around, you know, China and Russia and India and you know, Brazil and now Saudi Arabia all talking about their own currency. I see the story of China and India laundering Russian oil and reselling it to Western states. It seems like we're kind of divvying the world back up into kind of a Cold War scenario. And I'm concerned by what I see, especially coming out of Republicans, about Ukraine. And I'm worried where we're going to be at the end of the road when it comes to Ukraine and then how that plays out with Russia and China and all the. Does that make sense?
It makes total sense. And to my mind, as you know, this divvying up happens or you look at how where countries are positioning, it's scary. And it's especially scary because the U.S. seems to be failing in a pretty spectacular way at offering a compelling story or opportunity to countries to side with America. And it's failing even when it comes to our closest allies and partners. It gets really, really not a good thing that the French president went out to China a couple weeks ago and played nice with Xi Jinping for a week. That's really bad. And that he did that and explicitly said that France was positioning itself as, you know, separate from the U.S. and its China policy. And I think that that reflects this real, real U.S. failure to explain to its friends and to just generally other countries why they should believe in a U.S.-led world order, or why should they should just not believe in a Chinese-led world order.
No, that excellent. But is that Biden's fault? I mean, because I'm getting a lot of people going, you know, Biden's weak and Biden making us look weak internationally, and all of this is Biden's fault. Does this fall on his doorstep? I mean, he's president. The buck stops there. But in all actuality, we've been moving in this direction for a while, giving away our manufacturing base, opening up our borders, taking on massive debt from China, all of this, allowing them to come in and infiltrate all around. Is it his fault, though? I mean, is it his responsibility ultimately?
Right now, yes. It's also been the fault of his predecessors. And even as there's been this new awareness of China as a threat, this new effort to compete with China, American policy has just failed to do anything other than play defense and really do anything other than have sticks. And that's true of the Biden administration. It's also been true before him.
See, I would argue yeah. No sticks. I would argue all carrots. We keep giving stuff away. Well, be nice to us. Let us here's more. Take our manufacturing. Yeah, let U.S. corporations go over there, get their intellectual property stolen, and then come back and complain about it. I don't know that there hasn't been. Has there been any sticks? I mean, I guess the tariffs, a little bit.
Those are carrots vice China. I mean carrots for U.S. and allied entities to not deal with China. And there needs to be some of that, right? Like, you know, at a certain point, you can't just like give candy for normal behavior. But there has to be a like, here's a proactive vision that you can be part of. Here's a positive thing for the future that's going to make you better off as well as us better off. And that story just isn't there from the U.S. perspective and in U.S. China policy. And you can only go so far with China's bad, China's bad, China's bad, especially when it comes to convincing allies and partners that are frustrated with America. And, you know, frankly, that are just pissed off after decades of dealing with us.
So last line of questioning I've got for you then, you know, if you're advising Joe Biden, what does he do? I mean, I see, you know, bringing back some, trying to reshore some manufacturing is important. I look at this executive order that's coming down the pike as something possible, as moving us in a direction. What more should he be doing?
Yeah, and those are really critical places to start. There are a ton of tactical elements at both of those levels that I think are really important to bring on board. Like, if we're going to be reshoring manufacturing, let's not let any of that money go to Chinese entities. Let's also start at areas of value chains that we can make, such that we can make the entire value chain free of Chinese control. Let's not, you know, start halfway such that every input is going to be bought from China. Right. There are little tactical things like that, if that's even little. There's also just going back to this point, though, the point of a proactive vision. As we do that, as we say we're going to create trusted value chains, we're going to use either direct government investment or government shaping of incentives and regulations to this end. We also need to be working with American allies and partners. And we're kind of getting there, but we're getting there in this whack-a-mole and haphazard way that's actually alienating a lot of really critical countries that we need to work with.
And how do you do that, you know, with our political system where we seem to be, you know, maybe, you know, swinging a little bit on the pendulum where you don't know what our direction is. You don't know what, if our word means anything. I mean, we had the former guy, you've got Biden now, there's the threat of the former guy possibly coming back or someone worse. So who knows where the U.S. stands on any of this? And I can see how that can be destabilizing.
Yes, but on the other hand, the one thing that's a constant, even in recent pendulum swings, has been our China policy. And I think that that can be communicated, and that's understood by American allies and partners and can be communicated to them. And I think what it really means doing is when the U.S. develops a big policy whether that has to do with new defense measures against China or investment in trusted industry. The U.S. just also has to think about the international element of that, the allies and partners element of that, and communicate as much to them and make bring them into the circle.
Well, we'll see. I think we're stepping, baby steps. I'm hope there's much more, and I'm hoping the administration is listening and taking your advice. Emily, I appreciate you taking time for us. Thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors, the American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Texas, the land of perfection. Everybody's fed. No children are going hungry. No veterans are homeless. No homeless on the streets. Everyone's got clean energy. They've solved all their infrastructure problems. Schools are well-funded. Hospitals are flush with beds and staff. And it's a utopia. So the Texas Senate has time to go and pass a piece of legislation mandating that every public school classroom, everyone, has a prominently displayed copy of the Ten Commandments. Not only that, it's got to be a particular size, at least 16 inches wide by 20 inches high, and it's got to be prominently displayed and letters high enough that people with average eyesight, that's right, people with average eyesight are able to view it. Average vision from anywhere in the classroom, no obstructions. Can't hide it behind the flag, can't put it any, it's got to be, everyone can see it all the time, every minute. And they even enumerated what the Ten Commandments are. Good for them. Now, I do have a problem with it because some of the wording is different than the Ten Commandments that I learned as a kid. So I got to tell you, I'm feeling a little put out because they're not my Ten Commandments. But, here they are. The one I got that I find interesting is they write, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife." And that's where it always ended for me. Don't cheat on your neighbor's wife. Don't cheat with your neighbor's wife. But they've added, "Nor his manservant." Huh? What? Nor his maid servant. Okay. Nor his cattle. Nor anything that is thy neighbor's. I guess I'm coveting. Okay. Don't covet. This is going to be, put in every classroom because we have to. And I have this theory, and I interviewed a guy a number of years ago, a pastor who was big on the right-wing circuit for a while. His name was Pastor James David Manning. And, we had this conversation about him being a big supporter of Roy Moore, who at the time was being thrown off the Supreme Court because he had that giant monument of the Ten Commandments out front. And he was told to remove it and he refused to. And I said, look, I have this theory. I have a theory that people who want the Ten Commandments plastered everywhere are people who don't know it, don't know the Ten Commandments. So can you tell me what they are? And he went, "I got the book right here. I can read it to you." And I go, "No, I don't want you to read it to me. I want you to tell me what they are in your words, and even make up words if you have to." And he, adamant, "I'm going to read them to you." And I go, "So what you're telling me is you don't know them." And this is my problem with people who want them plastered everywhere. They need that constant reminder to be decent people. The sad thing is even when you plaster them all over the place, they're not decent people. They're willing to let children go hungry. They're willing to let people, be homeless. They're willing to let a lot of the negative things happen, even though we've got the rules. And this has always been frustrating to me. Now, am I angry that they're going to put them? No, I don't care. Is it going to harm me if the Ten Commandments are there? No, I already know them. But what do you do with people who don't believe? What about that whole separation of church and state thing?
WAUK 540 AM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
CBS News Special Report. It's a ruling that could be temporary. The U.S. Supreme Court maintains FDA approval of the pill mifepristone for abortion, rejecting lower court restrictions while a lawsuit continues. John Segoe is with Texas Right to Life.
I think that this case will end up in some victory for the pro-life movement. Unfortunately, we're just not seeing any of that effect with today's ruling.
The justices granted emergency requests from the Biden administration and Danko Laboratories, maker of the drug. Loyola Law School professor Lori Levinson.
It's interesting that even this order had two dissents, one by Justice Thomas, who simply said he would deny the stay, and a longer one by Justice Alito, who says that a stay was inappropriate. But you get a better sense of why it took until at least Friday to even get this short order, because the Supreme Court is clearly divided on how they would decide this case if and when it comes up to it.
CBS News Special Report, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
A progressive voice from Manitowoc to Janesville. WAUK 540 AM, always streaming at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. It's called loon fallout, and it happens when the migrating birds run into atmospheric conditions which cause ice to form, making them too heavy to fly. It's been happening in central and northern Wisconsin. Loons need at least a quarter mile of open water to run across in order to get airborne. If you see loons on the ground, call Loon Rescue or the Raptor Education Group Incorporated. Wisconsin's DNR is expanding the Check Out Wisconsin State Parks at Your Library program to 160 libraries starting on May 1st. Over 6,000 day passes will be available at the 160 libraries across the state. The one-time use passes are good for single-day admission for one vehicle at any state park, forest, or recreation area where admission is required. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Think you'd like working with us at Civic Media? We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin. If you have the right skills to join our team, let's talk. Civic Media is a proud equal opportunity employer committed to diversity and inclusion, along with the growth and development of all current and future employees. If you're interested or are part of an organization who wants to know more, go to our website, civicmedia.us, and click on the Careers tab.
Ready for a journey to Flavortown? Head over to Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill. They've been serving up the best food in Wrigleyville for 8 years and counting. From their famous smoked chicken wings to their tempura battered cheese curds, every bite is a trip to flavor heaven. And with hospitality that's second to none, you'll feel right at home. So why wait until after the game? Rev up your taste buds and join them at Roadhouse 66 Gas and Grill at 3478 North Clark Street in Chicago. Check out their menu on Facebook.
No Wisconsin resident should ever have to be without heat, water, or power. The Keep Wisconsin Warm, Cool Fund and your local energy assistance providers are here to help. For a hand up, apply today and call 1-800-506-5596. That's 800-506-5596. Or visit www.heat.help.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
This is blatant class war by the privileged few against the many.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So So interestingly enough, Smartmatic, the company that's also suing the F Channel, the reports coming out now from this is they want actually more than the $787 million that Fox agreed to pay Dominion. They want much more. And there's part of me goes, they should get it. Because ultimately, didn't they accuse Smartmatic of digging up a dead guy? You know, Hugo Chavez? And wasn't that a whole thing that was attached to Smartmatic, that they dug up this dead guy to do this? Going to be interesting to see, again, how these all play out. And here to share some thoughts on whether he thinks they'll get it or not, I've asked our good friend Bob Ney to come talk with us, former Ohio congressman and political analyst. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So what do you think of this? You see in another 787, or are we going to see more? Because Smartmatic's, what, $2.7 billion they're seeking in damages?
Right. Well, I guess that Chavez didn't help him very much.
He was only dead for, what, 10 years?
10 years. I don't know. But I think the main point of Dominion that I thought this out in a conversation with a lawyer about a month and a half ago, and I think that he was accurate with it, is that you've got a scenario where Fox knew it was in trouble. It didn't want all the emails revealed. I mean, we already know some of them, and they were horrific. Shows the internal problems of Fox and, you know, their entertainment host versus the management, et cetera. But in those, you know, beyond those, you can bet that Fox said, okay, we're going to pay you, you know, this X amount of money, and we want a gag order, and we don't want it known that we paid this. And you can imagine Dominion lawyers, once Fox said, we're going to pay, said, no, we're not going to do a gag order. We'll go to court. So that's the power of this lawsuit, if you think about it. Now, of course, you've got Systematic, who obviously is going to be pretty emboldened, I would say, looking at what happened with Dominion. And they're talking about Smartmatic is talking about getting an apology, the full retraction, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So we will see where this one goes. But I mean, if I were their lawyers, wouldn't you ask for more money?
Oh, absolutely. Especially when you're talking about, you're blaming it on a dead guy. I mean, because here's the thing. And I've had a bunch of people say, well, you should be afraid of this because, you know, now they're going to be coming after you and everybody else. And I'm going, no, bias is not illegal. Bias is not the issue here. Because I've had a bunch of people, well, you know, CNN's biased, MSNBC's biased. And you go, yeah, but lying is what they did. They outwardly were saying something that quietly they were going, it's all bunk. That's the difference to me.
Well, and also right now, I think that we have to realize that Smartmatic has a floor, and they're starting at, the payoff to Dominion. That's the floor. And then on top of it, they're going to want a retraction. They're going to want an apology. They're going to want more because they're going to go into a jury trial. And obviously they know that there was a settlement. So it's going to be, Katie barred the door from there. And I don't know. We'll see.
It's a good thing.
I can't imagine, unless there were no emails that were talking, directly about Smartmatic, but I doubt that.
Yeah, I guess from what I've been told is, for people who watch the F Channel, that they don't name anybody. They just, it's the election. It's the election companies. It's the voting machine companies. It's that stuff. They're now, it's not individual ones. It's all of them, which I think will be interesting to see where that goes. But it's a good thing that Fox has got deep pockets.
Well, even for Fox, though, this is a great portion of their income. And if you add this one on top of Dominion, and they could be at 60-some% of revenue that they made. And it'll be interesting. I mean, they're not going to want to do that, obviously. But they're going to have a hearing in Manhattan next week. And this will bring out, any evidentiary issues in the case. So we're going to know a lot more next week when those issues come out there. Now, Fox is arguing that that this wasn't the same, that, that this is way overblown and it's not plausible for any form of damage they had. But again, next week starts a process. We will see what Fox will do.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to next week. I want to get your thought on this Hunter Biden stuff. I've taken a position for a while. I don't care. It's the president's son did some dumb stuff. We've had, politicians' kids do dumb stuff. It's not the end of humanity, but this story keeps getting bigger and bigger. I don't know how much of it is true. It just seems to me, wouldn't it be, smart just to get on with it already?
Well, I think you're right because, look, Hunter Biden's lawyers this has been, I think today in the media, that they're going to meet with Justice Department next week, which happens. I've been down this path. Your lawyers start to meet with Justice Department. They're feeling each other out. Where are we going to be on this? What are you looking at? Now, a leak just came, of course, in the last 24 hours, and people say, a leak? Well, yes, justice leaks. Yes, they do. They do things. And this leak came about supposedly internally where FBI agents are saying, why didn't you do something with him? How come this hasn't been done? So when you start to see these types of things, usually indicates somebody in the Justice Department. It doesn't mean that it's, the Attorney General Garland, but somebody in there is beginning to try to put some kind of pressure. What you just said about, being out here and meeting and everything, I think it's appropriate. I mean, on the political side of this, if there's a tax implication problem, and if he lied on a form when he got a firearm, because you do have to put down whether you had drug issues or not. And by the way, I personally know somebody when I was in Morgantown Federal Corrections that they nailed for smoking one joint at a party 10 years before, and then he signed for his gun application. So I do know of cases where they got him for a year. I don't know. If I were they, I'm not they, I would just get this out here and get it over with. This is not the type of thing if justice is going to actually move on or the IRS is moving about income tax. I don't think it's the type of thing you want in the middle of 2024. Yeah. You want it out there. It'll be debated. And then after a while, I just don't think it would be the subject of ads. Other people's family members have done things. So I would assume this should just get out there and get done whichever way it goes.
I don't think it'll be ads, but I think the right-wing blogosphere, the right-wing talk radio people, all of the F channels of the world, this is a conspiracy, Bob. Biden's influencing the Justice Department to save his child and himself because he's the big guy, remember? 10% of the big guy, I guess, is their battle cry?
Well, I mean, look, the Justice Department can move slow on its own without
tell me about it.
From the White House. I went through, think about this, 2 years solid of lawyers and meetings and subpoenas and grand juries, 2 years. All of us did involved in that Abramoff case. And to come to, in my case, a deal of 18 months. So you would think after 2 years it would be like, you're going to do your 35 years, but it was that's the way the department operates. Yeah. And without any interference from the White House, the department will operate normally slow.
We'll see how that goes. I just think it's such a massive distraction. Kids do all kinds of stuff. I said from the beginning, unless they can tie this back to Biden, that he did all the things that now the conspiracy people are telling me, I think it's a non-issue.
Again, if in the middle of 2024, towards the end, all this goes down, obviously the publicity's fresh. I would assume anything that happens, if it happens now, some type of negotiation, which happens, that's what we did with the Justice Department, then it happens. And, another year passes, then it does become quite legitimately, politically, old news.
Yeah. I want to get your thoughts on President Biden's executive order on environmental justice, this idea that they're going to address higher pollution areas, that in places where people of color are in poverty areas, that this new directive, I guess, is going to have agencies identify and address data and science to make the environment better in some places. Is all we're going to get for the next year and a half or whatever executive orders out of the administration?
Well, I think so. This one, which was signed today, directs every single federal agency to work towards environmental justice for all, improve the lives of communities hit hardest by toxic pollution and climate change. Now, you know, that can be any community, it's a minority community or not. So it's being touted, of course, as something that's, helping the minority community. But again, it can be something that helps everybody. It's hard to, in particular, you look at New York City itself, it's got pollution that would be, or Los Angeles quite involved.
No matter what you sign, you're still not going to put the toxic waste dump in the good address. You're still not getting by the gated communities. You're still going to be where land is cheap and people are starved for development. So I see this and I'm going, I'm in favor of the idea. In practice, is it going to matter?
Well, that was the kind of the point I'm making that, you'll have the government doing this, but will the government still say to an agency, by the way, this next waste dump's going to be in the middle of Rodeo Drive in California? I don't think so. It's going to be more in somewhere, where we're from in Appalachia or something of that nature. That's the way these are run. But it's okay cause. To your point, yes, I think that probably, and these are going to be debated in court. We know that. That's what happens with executive orders. But I don't think you're going to see anything in particular that's going to be coming out of the United States Congress. So anything that happens is going to be, by executive order. Look at immigration. Anything that happened was by executive order.
Yeah.
I mean, if you go back through the last three presidents, that's what happens. Now, there are some things the Congress, has passed. For example, the stimulus, and, we could go through a few things. But on policies like this, I think they're going to be few and far between. And unless they're executive order, you're not going to have anybody focus on it. And it's a noble cause, look, to also on the other side of this, of minority justice and poorer communities, it is a noble cause to try to at least target something and make, some bit of sensitivity to the issue.
No. Look, as a kid growing up in the projects, we were in a high pollution area. I remember, I suffered from asthma horribly as a kid because of the airplane traffic, the factories, and all of the air pollution that we had. Maybe trying to make that a little bit lesser is a great idea, especially as we're looking for, just before Earth Day. You got any big plans for Earth Day? You going to be out planting a tree, doing anything like that?
I don't think so. I've never been a joiner of any day, I respect them, but I'm not, I'm probably have a nice lunch though. And I will not throw the wrappers or anything on the ground. I promise that.
See, this is where just being a decent person, you don't need a specific day, just every day be a decent person.
That's true.
Last thing I wanted to get with you on, there was a story, I guess it was over, what is it? I think it was maybe Politico, if I'm not mistaken, or actually the Wall Street Journal, basically asking the question, how wealthy our Supreme Court justices are. Is this something that we should know? I mean, is this something that should come up? And I guess, we talked about Dick Durbin inviting John Roberts to come and testify. I think this is kind of something that we've never discussed before.
Well, the justices listed, I think it wasn't between 24 million and like 70 million in assets they listed.
Right. It was Bloomberg, actually. 24 million and 68 million, they said.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is kind of a big gap.
Yeah, sure is. So like any person that's in any public position, which Supreme Court, of course, is, it should meet the standards that everybody else meets. Members of Congress will list their net worth and their worth. Now, of course, that led to other issues in Congress because of the fact of, the stocks and not having to, you know, list certain things. And I think it needs to be made clear to members of Congress, have blind trusts, how blind are those trusts, et cetera. And then that allows the government to, from the justice end, to see if anybody's doing any manipulation, you know, or unfair stock tips or something of that nature. So having said that, there's financial disclosures for members and financial disclosures for, you know, judges. So I don't know why the Supreme Court wouldn't have to say, you know, where its money comes from. Now, as far as, you know, when I was in Congress, there were members that had a lot of money and members that had money, but not a lot of money, if that makes sense. You know, they made a decent salary, but maybe I knew one from Pennsylvania. Mike Doyle had five kids, you know. So when you start to look at the salary, he obviously wasn't one of the wealthier ones. But I think it's good to see what they are worth, because then if all of a sudden you go in and you're worth a certain amount and you've accumulated, you know, $15 million worth of wealth, then I think people have the right to know where did it come from.
I think so as well. And I found out that John Roberts is our richest Supreme Court justice. Some, you know, between 9 and 27 million, which again seems like a lot, a big difference. I think I would rather be closer to the 27 than the 9. And our poorest justice being Brett Kavanaugh, somewhere between a net worth of 15,000 and 65,000.
Take half of that. I'll be okay with half of that.
Wish I had that too. There you go. Bob, I appreciate the time. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. Thank you.
Our good friend Bob Ney. Look, you know, I look at this and I'm going, you know, I still got questions on who paid off the debts, because, you know, Brett Kavanaugh now has a positive asset of $15,000 to $65,000. Who paid it off? That's the question. Quick break. Right back to wrap things up. Stick around. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1894. The nation was in the grips of depression. Unemployment soared. Workers' wages and hours were cut dramatically in virtually every industry. Coal miners were especially hard hit. At a meeting in Columbus, Ohio, the United Mine Workers of America called for a nationwide strike. Even though the union had only about 20,000 official members, more than six times that many walked off the job. The strike stretched from Washington State to Alabama to the Appalachian coal fields. Violent skirmishes broke out when scab workers attempted to enter the mines and replace the striking miners. One such example occurred near Uniontown, Pennsylvania, where armed guards killed five striking workers and wounded eight more. In five states, the militia was called out due to the unrest. Where the strikers were not able to turn away the scab labor, they employed a different tactic. They attempted to stop the delivery of the mined coal. In Illinois, for example, striking miners piled railroad ties and other debris on the railroad tracks to stop the coal trains from running. This interference with the trains meant that the federal government had the justification it needed to enter the struggle. A U.S. judge ordered an end to stopping train traffic. The New York Times declared the power of the federal government being behind the writ, all the force necessary to move the train will be used. The strike stretched on for weeks, but in the end, the strikers could not combat the coal mine owners, local militias, hired security, and scab labor. The strike was broken. The United Mine Workers faced a severe setback to their organizing that was not overcome for more than two decades. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com. Like us on Facebook and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in Two. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, ricksmithshow.com. So interesting story, something we're going to be talking about a lot next week. The 12 unions that represent the workers, more than 100,000 workers in the railroad industry, they've come out and they've said collectively the six biggest freight railroads, they have spent $165 billion on stock buybacks, which is way above the $119 billion they've spent on upgrading their facilities, maintaining their tracks, investing in their business. So they've taken more out than they've actually put in. Now, remember, we give them these big tax breaks under the idea that we're gonna get investments and make things more efficient and pay workers better, and it's gonna be better for society. When all we find out is they're pocketing more for them, less for everybody else. And this, you could bring prices down. Remember that inflation word? You know, that $165 billion could have been bringing prices down. But no, we're going to give it to the rich people to put in their pockets. And why? Because they prefer stock buybacks over dividends, because they got to pay tax on dividends. Dividends is taxed differently. And surprise, surprise, we're going to ensure that the wealthy get what they want. Now, these stock buybacks are taxed. You know, President Biden at the beginning of the year did get that 1% tax, that whopping 1%. That was the best he could get. So I find it interesting that this is happening. And like I said, I'm going to spend a lot of time on this next week, because this is the kind of stuff that's been screwing over working people. This is the kind of stuff that's just been infuriating to me. And again, we're arguing over all of the fringe stuff while getting robbed blind. I want to finish off today's program with a story out of Republic, Missouri. This is, again, I got to finish off on a gun story for the week. Larry Gene Gay is his name. He's a 70-year-old from Springfield, Missouri. Evidently just wanted to go to the local Price Chopper. Wanted to get some steaks. And what's wrong with that? What's wrong with a guy, in the, you know, 70-year-old guy going, you know what? I want me a steak. Weekend's coming. You want to make sure that friends and family are well fed. Going to throw something on the grill. Who could be against that? Problem is, the price cutter, it's not Price Chopper, it's Price Cutter. Evidently, the meat department was closed. So he was angry. You know, a little upset. You know, wanted his steaks, man. Didn't want the ones that were on the rack. Wanted the ones from the window, I guess. So he showed the clerk behind the counter a gun. flashed a gun to the clerk. Now, this is the funny part. When they were interrogating him, the officer asked him why he thought the people at the store had called the police on them and said that he was threatening them with a gun. And his response is, I don't know. I have no idea. He just wanted some steaks. He seemed to think in his mind that just showing him his gun, and I guess he said that, I'm not stealing anything. I just need you here to help me get these steaks. I'm not going to hurt you. I think he thought that was okay. That's how we do things in America. Let me ask you, if you're behind the counter and someone shows you a gun, are you going to be more likely or less likely to help them? And would you call the police? Now, me personally, I'm going to be hyper nice to them. I'm going to get them whatever they want while we're calling the police. Because one, I don't want to get shot. I don't know how crazy this guy is, especially with all the news that's out today of people going, you know, I'm a good guy with a gun. And is this normal? I know I read it and I laughed because it's kind of funny. But this is what the gun culture has gotten us to. People being irresponsible at every level. Look, you know, you can make an argument that, you know, someone ringing the doorbell frightened someone, and that's going to be their argument, that the guy was afraid and that he was pulling on the door. He was making aggressive moves, so we had to shoot him because he was in fear for his life. You could make the argument the guy, you know, the car pulled in the driveway. Hey, no one ever comes out here. I had to shoot her. I guess you could make that argument. I don't think you can do it with a straight face. But how can you defend, I went into the Price Cutter and flashed my piece because I wanted a steak? Wow. Is this where we're heading? Is this the natural destination? And does it get worse? I sure hope not. Because, man, wow. But good on you, Gay. It'll be interesting to see how this plays out because he's been charged with one felony count of unlawful use of a weapon and one felony count of armed criminal action. Chances are he's going to get a lot of meat. Probably not the kind he wanted. Gonna take a quick break. Back after this. We'll see you back here next time. Make sure you grab the podcast.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always